Ladies and gentlemen, live from the West Coast, it's time for Ring Talk Live Worldwide, your inside look into combat sports.
Ring Talk Live Worldwide, brought to you by the WBC, the World Boxing Council.
It is absolutely necessary that we all get together, we work together, we respect each other, we like and love each other.
And now, the host of the longest-running fight show in radio and internet history.
I'm getting tired of people running from me in the ring. Mike Tyson, Holyfield, you a bunch of bums. Stand up and be a man and fight a real fighter.
Pedro Fernandez.
Damas y caballeros, bienvenidos, ladies and gentlemen. Emanating, coming at you from the multi-million dollar sports byline studios. Check it. This is Ring Talk Live Worldwide and WBC TV. Often imitated, but hardly duplicated, 37 make death, 38 plus years now of knocking out all bums. Who am I? My name is Pedro Fernandez. I am your ever so modest host. I'm also a four-time Golden Gloves champion and award-winning boxing writer. So supposedly, allegedly, I'm supposed to know something about boxing. But guess what? The average fan I found out always knows a little bit more. So I will open up the toll-free right here at the top of the hour just once. If you want to impart, you can. 1-800-878-7529. That's 1-800-878-7529. That's the studio line. Of course, you want to text us here in the studio. That number, 415-275-1613. That's 415-275-1613. Of course, Manny Pacquiao, 8 days now in the rearview mirror. Should he retire? Yes, he should retire. He's 42 years old. He got licked like a stamp. Of course, Yuri Ugas, give him his props for winning that fight. But the bottom line is, he's never going to end up in the Boxing Hall of Fame. Manny Pacquiao is, no doubt about it. Now, about Manny Pacquiao being great, the greatest of all time, the second greatest of all time, all that kind of good stuff, I will just say this. As far as the non-boxing end of boxing is concerned, he was the greatest ambassador of goodwill since Muhammad Ali. Without a doubt, Manny Pacquiao deserves that title. Now, the greatest fighter of all time? I don't think so, because a lot of guys that he beat were like way, way over the hill. And of course, Manny Pacquiao was always suspected that he was taking Flintstone vitamins. You know what those are. Anabolic steroids. You are tuned, suspected. You are tuned to Ring Talk Live Worldwide. Check it in WBC Boxing TV.
Place to place. Never knowing just what to do. But I'm not long enough.
Ring Talk Live Worldwide is brought to you by the World Boxing Council, the WBC.
Anything is boxing, though. I don't know what you do for a living, but pretty sure ain't nobody punching you all in your eye. I watched one fight. Roy Jones got hit so hard, my TV moved. He was asleep like he got knocked out of the club. The ref was like 241, 242. Roy was snoring. He was really knocked out. He was laying there so long, they had to start another fight. Roy was still there.
The Great Earthquake, courtesy of HBO, of course, Home Box Office. You are tuned to Ring Talk Live Worldwide. Check it, you're inside looking for the world of boxing and MMA. My name is Pedro Fernandez. Of course, this is hour number one of two, coming to you live on Sports Byline, iHeartRadio, and of course, Twitch.tv, the Sports Byline USA channel. That is the live stream as we go. Veeve TV is taking a delayed stream on this show, so the bottom line is we're rocking and rolling all over the planet. Welcome to the longest running fight show in history, Ring Talk Live Worldwide. Well, guess what? Tonight's showtime goes with Jake Paul. Now, who is Jake Paul? Jake Paul reminds me of a boxing hillbilly. I mean, he just does. He just can't do a whole lot. I mean, his abilities aren't really world-class or anything like that, but through the world of music and hip-hop and gangsters and all this kind of good stuff, and he's a white guy, believe it or not. 3-0 with three knockouts for the three guys he's knocked out. Well, the bottom line is Scott Cuddy's better than all three of those guys. But the bottom line is, at the end of the day, he seems to be attracting new fans of the sport of boxing. So if he can do that, more power to him. I mean, I got no knock on that. I really don't. Do I think it's crazy he's making all this kind of money? No. You can make what you can make. If you can charge somebody $135 an hour, go out and charge them $135 an hour and feel confident in doing so if you can do a good job. Evidently, Showtime's happy because Steven Espinoza, of course, the VP, the guy that's in charge of programming Showtime, the guy that told me one time that MMA drew more Mexicans, per se, than boxing. I said, what? He goes, yeah, no, per cap, percentage-wise. In other words, there were less people watching the Showtime. I think they had Bellator at that point in time on Showtime, but there were less people watching MMA and generally, but there were more Hispanics watching MMA than there were watching boxing. In other words, the more numbers were in boxing, but the greater percentage was watching MMA. So Stephen Espinosa took note of that, and of course he tried to do the MMA thing. He's trying to do things with Bellator and things like that, and a couple of international fight leagues. He's tried all kinds of different deals. Nothing seems to be going in the world of mixed martial arts. So he's turned to gimmick fights. And this gimmick fight, and if it keeps, help keep Showtime around, more power to Showtime, because when HBO left, and we'll talk about that a little bit later, of course, HBO's greatest hits coming up in about 40 minutes past the hour, that's right, the Godfather, retired HBO Godfather, Larry Merchant, of course, he will be here discussing HBO's greatest hits, the greatest hits of Larry's greatest hits, of course. Larry's with them, from 1978 to 2012. That's a long, long time. Of course, the retired HBO Godfather has had some laryngitis and a cold and all kinds of issues. That's why he hasn't appeared live, but we'll talk about that a little bit later, of course, on today's show. Once again, our text line is hot and happening. I see a couple texts coming in right now. 415-275-1613. That's 415-275-1613. A real legit fighter on this Jake Paul card. Oh, who's Jake Paul going to fight? Tyrone Woodley. Tyrone Woodley is a former UFC champion. Decent hands. I mean, he's got decent hands. Some of these MMA guys have no hands. I mean, none. Okay. But he's got some hands, got some decent hands. I don't know if it's enough to outbox Jake Paul because, we don't know what Jake Paul really is. Jake Paul is an unknown commodity. Jake Paul, if I call him a freak show, Stephen Espinosa will get pissed off and call me on the phone. So I won't call him a freak show, but that's what I think basically he is. Okay. If he was fighting legit guys, he'd be legit. But no, he's fighting karate guys and MMA guys. Anyway, Tyrone Wood, last guy he fought was Ben Askren. He knocked out Ben Askren quicker than Jorge Masvidal did. Masvidal knocked out Ben Askren, I think, in 8 or 9 seconds. This guy knocked him out even faster. Anyway, bottom line is, it was no contest. It was just bang. It was all over. Bottom line is, Ben Askren can't take a punch. Ben Askren doesn't belong in boxing, okay? Now, Tyrone Woodley may be a different breed. Am I trying to say this will be competitive? I don't know, but it might be entertaining. Of course, the co-feature features one of the best fighters pound for pound in the world of women's boxing, maybe historically. I'm talking about the once beaten Amanda Serrano from the East Coast, of course, of Puerto Rican descent. She's got the WBC and the WBO 126-pound title, I believe, and she's defending that on the undercard of Jake Paul and Tyrone Woodley. Listen, this girl's the real deal. She can fight. The bottom line is there's not a whole lot of girls for her to fight. In other words, when you're superior at one, like Francis Ngannou in the UFC, I think he's the UFC heavyweight champion, and nobody can compete with him. I think that nobody can compete with Amanda Serrano at 126 pounds. She's just that good. I mean, she's really that good. So the bottom line is, at the end of the day, we expect her to be still anointed come tomorrow or the next day, the pound-for-pound queen of all women's boxing. Of course, Clarissa Shields, the WBC champion, I believe at junior middleweight or middleweight, she has a claim to that as well. Of course, she's also done some MMA. In fact, both these girls are doing MMA and boxing, both Clarissa Shields and, listen, when I saw Amanda Serrano, go out there and take this girl apart real quick, I said to myself, whoa, Amanda can fight a little bit outside of boxing. Of course, Holly Holmes started all this kind of stuff when she made the crossover from boxing to MMA, of course, and then beat Ronda Rousey. But Amanda Serrano, she knocks some girl out in the blink of an eye. And then Clarissa Shields, Clarissa's got a big mouth. I mean, a huge mouth, okay? She talks a lot of smack, but for the most part, she's been able to back it up. I mean, she's not the most entertaining fighter in the world in a lot of her fights, but in that MMA fight that she had, she was almost guillotined or choked out in the first round, and she fought through that. She fought through that, and she came back and won. So the bottom line is, I got to give her some props, even though I don't think like her as a boxer. At the end of the day, I guess she sells a few tickets, and she is a WBC champion. She's got 9 different belts, I think, right now. But the bottom line is, at the end of the day, is she's talented. She just doesn't appeal to me. So it's Jake Paul and Tyrone Woodley. Of course, the David Benavidez fight versus Jose Uzicar, that was canceled. It was supposed to be last night. Of course, they canceled that for some reason related to COVID. Of course, COVID is still rocking the entire world again. Of course, a lot of people are just ignoring COVID. I've got a friend of mine right now that's in Kaiser Hospital in San Francisco, and I begged him to go get the vaccine. Listen to me, folks. I begged him. His name is Bobby. I begged him to go get the vaccine. He kept telling me he wasn't going to get it. He didn't need it, this and that. Right now, he has oxygen in Kaiser Hospital here in San Francisco. And this guy, I mean, I've known a couple of people longer, but he's probably the most responsible person that I've known in my entire life as far as outside of a relative, Bobby Antonelli, and he's in the hospital. So, and that, if that ain't enough, I'll end it on this one, my little vaccine quip here. Two people I know, George's sisters, I'll just leave it to you like that. I grew up with George and went to elementary school together. Anyway, George's sisters both refused the vaccine, okay? One of them retired from a job in the city and county of San Francisco because she didn't want to take the vaccine. Well, guess what? 2 weeks later, dead. The other one, sick. What am I trying to tell you? If you're unvaccinated, you're running the risk of being seriously ill. Don't do it. It's better taking the vaccination. And, of course, I think it's the fact that why am I so pro-vaccine? Because I study U.S. history. In 1918, there was a flu that called the Spanish flu. And what was more heavier than the 1918 flu was the 1920 flu is when it came back the second wave. Of course, America brought this flu to Europe during the war, and then they brought it back from Europe. When I try to explain that to people, they don't understand. But in the 8th and the 9th grade, they gave me this task in history class to study the Spanish flu. So I studied the Spanish flu. So that's how I sort of got hip on vaccines and vaccinations and that kind of good stuff. And, of course, we all took vaccinations when we came into this planet. We take polio vaccines and measles vaccines, and I take a flu vaccine. I never thought about taking a flu vaccine until about 4 or 5 years ago, but I haven't got the flu since. And I'm feeling pretty good. You know, speaking of Larry Merchant, 90 years old now. He's been taking vaccines since the 1930s. What am I trying to tell you? Vaccines ain't killing nobody. Viruses are. You are tuned to Ring Talk Live Worldwide. Check it. Your inside look into the world of boxing and MMA. Open phone lines around the planet. 1-800-878-7529. That's 1-800-878-7529. Of course, there's also the guilt-free, no-commitment text line. You can text me, 415-275-1613. The text line, once again, 415-275-1613. You people on Veev TV, what's happening? This is Ring Talk. Started to let your hair grow, spend big bucks to top your wardrobe, but somehow you know there's much more to the trip. What is hip? Tell me if you think you know. What is hip? If you're really hip, the past and the years will show you in a hip trip, maybe hipper than hip. What is hip?
Now more of Ring Talk with Pedro Fernandez.
Check it. This is Armed and Extremely Dangerous. This was my original theme song. Back in 1984, when we first hit the air, this was it. Armed and Extremely Dangerous by Third Choice. Boy, do I thank those ladies for the memories. No doubt about that. Speaking of memories, it was September 21st, 1985. My travel agent at the time was Barbara Martinez. She was related to Hector Martinez. Of course, Hector and I are going to be doing a series on this show, on this network called Hector and I, or Hector and Me. We'll get into that a little bit later. But Barbara Martinez, I need to go see Michael Spinks and Larry Holmes. They're going to fight the 21st of September, I believe, 1985, down there at the Riviera Hotel in Las Vegas, Nevada. And I've got tickets and all this kind of good stuff, credentials, and I got all this stuff going on. But the bottom line is I didn't make any travel plans. So, you know, I sort of like at the last minute, so I called my travel agent, Barbara Martinez. Again, she was related to Hector and the family at that point in time. So I told her, look, I need to go to Vegas. I need to go for this fight, blah, 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 blah. Whatever it costs me, I'm going. So she said, okay. So she books me on some flight, and I go down there, and I'm going to this hotel, and she books me to this hotel called the Polynesian Hotel. Now, the Polynesian Hotel sounds like it's a Polynesian hotel. Maybe there's a Samoan or Hawaiian atmosphere or something like that going on. So, hey, you know, no big thing. I don't give a smart. Anyway, I'm going there for the fight. I'm going in. I'm going out. I'll be there like 15, 16, 18 hours max, right? So anyway, I get in the cab, and I tell the cab driver, I want to go to the Polynesian Hotel, and he looks back at me. And what's up with that? So he looks back at me. I don't realize what's going on yet. I have no idea that something's amiss. So I get to the hotel, and this really gay dude is a bell guy, the bellboy, okay? And he opens the door to my cabin. Welcome to the Polynesian. That's kind of good stuff. So I sort of got the idea that maybe something was amiss here, okay? So this guy checks me in, and I go into the hotel, and there's another obviously gay guy behind the desk working the front desk. So I'm coming to the conclusion here that Barbara Martinez has booked me into a gay hotel. Okay, now I'm not homophobic or anything like that. I mean, I see two gay guys going down the street holding each other's hand. I say to myself, two more chicks for me. This is the way to look at it. Okay, so I'm not homophobic, this and that. But I'm a little uneasy here, just a little uneasy, even though I'm from San Francisco. So anyway, that's just it. So when they find out I'm from San Francisco, when the hotel guy that's checking me in finds out I'm from San Francisco, he starts like fluttering. He starts fluttering around. I couldn't believe he's fluttering. I'm like, oh my God. So anyway, bottom line is, I got out of the hotel the next morning, like at 6:30, 7 o'clock in the morning. And when I came downstairs, the bellman, the same bellman was there. Didn't he work nights? And last night, guys working 24-hour shifts, something like that. So when he goes, Mr. Fernandez, have a nice trip home. And I was like, whoa. Anyway, bottom line is, it was a wonderful weekend as far as the fight was concerned. So Michael Spinks winning a 15-round unanimous decision over Larry Holmes. Of course, Larry going into that fight, 48-0. Trying to tie Rocky Marciano's record. Larry told me the worst he thought he could have got was a draw. It was a 15-round fight. Larry should have just stepped it up a little bit more. I mean, he let Spinks. Spinks is the most awkward and unordinary, I guess, or unordinary would be a good word to put it. He just does things weird. I mean, if you're supposed to throw lefts, when you're supposed to throw lefts, he throws rights, and he throws weird hooks and uppercuts. He's got shovel punches. I mean, Michael Spinks is a completely unorthodox fighter, even though he boxes from the orthodox side, meaning he's right-handed, okay? But he's very, very unorthodox. So he was giving Larry Holmes all kinds of fits. And, you know, Larry was getting old at that point in time. Larry's career, of course, he hadn't been fighting that much. He fought Carl the Truth Williams, and some people thought that Larry shouldn't have got that fight. He knocked out David Bay, and David Bay was 14-0, but David Bay was one of those guys who never had a chance. Bone Crusher Smith went 12 rounds with Larry Smith. Larry, of course, Bone Crusher, I call him Bone Hugger. Remember he had that fight with Mike Tyson, and he hugged him for 11 rounds. And then in the 12th round, he cracks Tyson and wobbles Tyson, got Tyson's knees to buckle. And had he only thrown a punch a little bit early, he might have done something. But James Bone Hugger Smith, the only college graduate to ever attain a heavyweight championship, I think he was a University of North Carolina. I think it was, I forget what the degree was, but the bottom line is he does have a college degree, but he wasn't smart enough to utilize it in boxing, because the bottom line is he didn't last all that long. But that one chance he had to, that one, listen, when you're the opponent, I tell you guys this week in and week out, day and every show, when you're the opponent, you're not supposed to win the fight. On paper, you're not supposed to win the fight. You have no chance of winning the fight. In other words, you're not supposed to have a chance to win the fight. The promoter's picked against you. Yeah, all right. He promoting the fight. He wants his guy to win, okay? The other manager, maybe the boxing establishment. The boxing establishment could be against you. I mean, the boxing establishment, they screwed Juan Manuel Marquez in that Manny Pacquiao trilogy. I mean, you're trying to tell me that he basically had to shoot Manny Pacquiao with a gun in order to win. That's how Juan Manuel Marquez won that third fight. He had to knock Manny Pacquiao into another time zone, another zip code. He just had to, or he wasn't going to win. I mean, he was going to win. I mean, those first two fights, man, a little shaky there. I think they called the second one a draw. The first one they gave to Pacquiao. I could probably argue that Marquez won maybe all three of those fights. And, of course, but the third fight, he was getting lit up like the White House Christmas tree. I mean, he was just getting tattooed. Manny Pacquiao was just kicking his you-know-what. And then Marquez came back with that beautiful right-hand counter, and it was all over. Manny Pacquiao, you can count to 40 that night. He wasn't getting up no way, no how. Bottom line is, 1 week ago, he takes on a guy that really can't punch all that much, and Yuri Ugas. He's a formidable fighter, no doubt about that. He has a Cuban pedigree. He's like a, Hector calls him professional amateurs, anybody that's in the Cuban ranks. Anyway, he's won a few fights. He's lost a few fights. The bottom line is he was a 2-1 underdog going into the last week's fight with Manny Pacquiao, but he had a wise guy in his corner. And that wise guy was Louis DeCubas. They call him the Cube, okay? Louis is a smart businessman, money-wise. He and Mike Acri, the late Mike Acri, of course, the guys that orchestrated the big comeback of Roberto Duran. Of course, when Roberto came back and beat Iran Barkley for the world middleweight title in 1989. Anyway, they orchestrated that. They orchestrated the comeback of Roberto Duran. I mean, when I thought Roberto was done, and they stick a fork in him, this and that, they got him in with Juan Manuel Jimenez or some Juan Jimenez down there, and he was ranked by the WBC, so that gave him a top 10 ranking. Once he got the top 10 ranking, he went in there and he beat Iran Barkley in Atlantic City. It was, of course, that was a fight where it was snowing that day, and like people were having a hard time getting from Philly to Atlantic City for the fight. And then the lady said to me, she goes, yeah, I don't know how you're going to get to Atlantic City. I said, what do you mean you don't know how I'm going to get to Atlantic City? What are you talking about? She goes, it's snowing. I was in the airport. She goes, it's snowing. I go, whoa. So I'll just take the bus. She goes, no, the buses aren't allowed to go on the expressway. I said, why not? I said, well, what's going on? How am I going to get there? She goes, I don't know. So I went down to the rent-a-car place, and they had two cars left, and one of them was a four-wheel drive vehicle. So there I was barreling down the Atlantic City Expressway in this four-wheel drive vehicle. I got to see the fight. Of course, Roberto Duran knocking Iran Barkley down in the 11th round with the best four-punch combination the man has ever thrown in his entire life. And of course, I think he had like 112, 115 fights. But that combination he threw against Barkley that night, better than the right hand he threw against Davey Moore, better than any punch he'd ever thrown in his life. That four-punch combination, of course, brought back Roberto, made Roberto champion once again. Of course, the WBC middleweight title holder. February 1989, Roberto Duran winning a 12-round unanimous knot over Iran the Blade Barkley. Barkley was favoring that fight. So Duran came back. Well, he stunned everybody that time. And of course, and that wasn't the first time. In 82, he was considered finished when he was defeated by the late Kirkland Lang, who died about 2.5 months ago from the UK. Kirkland Lang smoked more weed than me. Just put it to you like that. Anyway, then, of course, you know, he hooked up with Pepino Cuevas. That was down there in L.A., and it was like a crossroads of former champions, this and that. It was getting down to the L.A. Sports Arena. All of L.A. was into this fight. I mean, they were. L.A. was there, no doubt about it. Of course, Duran stopped him in the fourth round after getting checked by a left hook in the third round. Duran got checked by Cuevas. Listen, I said to myself, how can anybody lose to Pepino Cuevas? And then I talked to people like Harold Weston, the former Madison Square Garden matchmaker. And Harold said to me, you don't get it. You don't get it, Pedro. You can outbox him, but somehow he finds a way to hit you. And when he hits you, it's all over. He broke Harold Weston's jaw. So I didn't think, Pepino Cuevas and me, I just never thought he was all that much, but he could punch. And in the third round, bam, he hit Roberto so hard, Roberto shook. Just a little bit. And then he looked at him like, MF, you in trouble now. And he went back and he annihilated Pepino at that point in time. But the Pepino Cuevas, of course, fight catapulted him to the Davey Moore fight, June of 1983. I think it was his birthday. In fact, in 1983, when Roberto fought Davey Moore, of course, Madison Square Garden, the Garden was sold out. Everybody was expecting Moore to do what was likely. I mean, Davey Moore was a younger guy. He was unbeaten. And I'll never forget the disrespect that Davey Moore showed Roberto Duran before the fight. I'll never forget this. And guess what? Davey Moore will never forget it either. And I'll tell you, because they're about to ring the bell, and they got the two guys in the corner, okay? And Davey Moore looks over at Duran, and he looks down like this, like, looks down like, man, like you're about to go down this day. And that wasn't the way it went down. Of course, that second round when Roberto caught him, they both threw right hands in the second round. Guess what? You better beat Roberto to the punch, because if he catches you with that right hand, he may be a lightweight, but he can crack. And he cracked Davey Moore, and of course that changed the entire fight. Stopped Davey Moore, I think, in the eighth round. Of course, the referee was Ernesto Magana, should have been arrested for impersonating a professional referee that night, because he had no physical regard, he's supposed to be a foster parent. When you're a referee, you're sort of like the guardian of the fighters, okay? And he was a guardian of Davey Moore that night, and he kept letting Davey Moore take more and more of an ass whoop. But I kept saying to myself, we're at the LA Main Street Theater down there in LA. Stop it. You know, because you can just see it. There's no sense in this going on. But Ernesto Magana let it go on to the point where I think Davey Moore's corner almost had to stop the fight. And the fact that they didn't stop the fight earlier is an indictment of them. Of course, Davey Moore, one of the few guys I know that got run over by his own car. Yeah, that's what happened to him. He was working on his car in the driveway, and somehow the car slipped out of gear and ran him over and killed him. Now, either he's the dumbest guy in the world, or he's the most unluckiest guy in the world. Take your choice. You are tuned to Ring Talk Live Worldwide. Check it. You're inside looking to the world of boxing, MMA. After the break, I'll introduce it, but we'll spend some time with the HBO Godfather, going back in time and looking at Larry's greatest hits. Larry Merchant's greatest hits coming up on Ring Talk Live Worldwide and WBC TV. What did you do?
Now, more
more of Ring Talk with Pedro Fernandez.
Go put your coat on, honey. This is getting good.
You are tuned to Ring Talk Live Worldwide, your inside look in the world of boxing and MMA. Yesterday, my current guest, Larry Merchant, told me he was being interviewed by somebody who was looking into the history of HBO. You know, you and I haven't talked about HBO. I mean, the fact that when HBO sort of retired and went off the air as far as boxing was concerned, that was a bit sad. But outside of that, we haven't talked really extensively about your time at HBO. What were the highlights and the lowlights? If you go through it, like from 78 on, right? From 78 is when you started, correct?
Yes.
Okay.
You know, to me, they were just highlights and bigger highlights. Whether it turned out well or not, if you're out there analyzing and telling stories and critiquing, there are some nights when you miss the story.
Mm-hmm.
You miss the central story of the fight. That happens, and that's why, just like you have three officials, and you hope that at least two of them get a result right, you have three announcers, or at least we did, and you hope that two of them got it right, and most usually we did. But there were higher highlights. We covered so many great fights from Sugar Ray Leonard and Hearns and Hagler in the 80s, and then the heavyweights in the late 80s and early 90s. I always think of the my timeline regarding Mike Tyson.
Mm-hmm.
And our experiences together and his leaving HBO because he didn't particularly want me to announce his fights. but, you know, I don't think of it in those terms. You know, what I think of is one of the questions I'm often asked is what my best interviews were.
Mm-hmm.
And most people are thinking of the incident with Floyd Mayweather, but to me,
not me,
the Buster Douglas Mike Tyson fight, which was of course this enormous upset, was some kind of serious moment for me as a broadcaster. I had originally come from print journalism.
Mm-hmm.
Because Buster Douglas, after that fight, was so tied up emotionally, having won the heavyweight championship of the world, having maybe resolved some issues with his father, who was a tough middleweight in his time, not a championship caliber fighter, but a tough guy. And Buster was raised in his gym, and Buster wasn't exactly a tough guy, and he tried other sports until he came back to boxing. And then the fact that his mother had died a few weeks before. So all these entanglements, emotional history came to play, and when I went to interview Buster Douglas, he couldn't talk. He was so wound up emotionally. And I heard a voice in my head saying, "This is show and tell, Larry. Just let's show this. We do these interviews in part to show who these fighters are as human beings. We do these interviews to answer some questions and question some answers." And he couldn't talk. And he stepped back, and his handlers took him, and they were whispering to him, "Let's go back to the dressing room, let's go." But he wanted to tell his story, and it took him maybe 20 or 30 seconds, which is a lifetime in television seconds, to gather himself to tell the story he wanted to tell about the fight and what it all meant to him. To me, that was my suddenly becoming a professional at this craft, because I understood that the camera focusing on this guy who had just pulled off the upset of the century, or so we thought at the time, and all of his emotional cords being rung, that was real television. It didn't need a question. But then he stepped forward and we talked about all of these things, and to me that was a primal moment. And there were other lessons that I learned from what I did across the years.
You know, when I think of Buster Douglas, I think of Haseem Rahman and most recently Andy Ruiz, guys that pulled off this huge upset and then just couldn't handle it emotionally.
Well, they couldn't handle it afterwards. Certainly Buster Douglas couldn't. He put on
100 pounds.
15 pounds or so for his fight with Holyfield,
yeah,
and didn't seem to care very much. And he didn't. He didn't love boxing. In that moment, because of his mom's death, because of his differences with his father, and because he was fighting for the heavyweight championship, it was a way of redeeming his whole life. And now those are the stories we try to tell. But, yeah, you know, fighters are human beings, and some of them handle things differently than others. I have to remind myself that the guy I'm trying to interview was just getting punched for an hour. So,
yeah.
And just learning to do my homework before the events so that I will have enough of information in my head to feel that I could say certain things.
I think it was 1982, and I used to, Harold used to tell me this, the late Harold Letterman, your broadcast partner, of course, the HBO boxing judge, that voice, Harold's voice. Well, Jim, bottom line is, Harold told me the best fight that he ever called, he thought, with you guys was the Gomez-Pintor fight, Wilfredo Gomez and Lupe Pintor, back in 1982. Of course, Pintor ascending from 118 pounds to 122 pounds. He had beaten the former bantamweight great Carlos Zarate at 118, moved up to 122, and Gomez they went back and forth. Gomez finally won, but what a battle of wills.
Yeah, and that was the next fight we did after the fight in Miami. I'm trying to think of the names of the fighters. They fought at least one rematch. The great fighter from Nicaragua.
Alexis Arguello and Aaron Pryor.
Right. I mean, how good was that? So we were in a run in those days of having a lot of big fights, which sometimes means an outstanding fighter is in a mismatch because there just aren't enough guys around to compete with him, or two really good fighters just throwing down.
Yeah, you know, we brought up Alexis Arguello there. Of course, death in 2009, 2008, still questionable whether he shot himself or somebody killed him. He was so emotionally depressed that he came on his show and talked about death and things like that. And I tried to go down to Nicaragua and straighten him out, and he finally went into rehab, this and that. But both he and Pryor were smoking crack together in Miami. When he told me that story, I almost wanted to cry. He was telling me the story in Managua, Nicaragua, sitting in his backyard. And he goes, yeah, Aaron and I were smoking crack together in Miami. And I say to myself, what could send a man in that direction? You know, I was just blown away by that. And Alexis was never the same, ever. He was an emotionally tender man. And I think that first fight with Pryor just broke him for the rest of his life.
Well, listen, how many tens of thousands of people are dying in America of opioids every year?
Every day.
That may not be the same as trying to achieve a high. It's trying to avoid a low. and then getting so low you never return. But crack was a thing, and it affected all of society, and it shouldn't surprise us that some fighters were affected by it as well.
Speaking of this opioid thing, I mean, the fact that you can get, that you were able to get these pills, I mean, they were willing to give them to me left and right. I never took a one in my life. I never took a one, but they gave me a couple of pain pills one time for my dentistry and for my back and this and that. And that's what they told me. Just take this, just take this. Godfather, man, these are doctors pushing stuff on you, so you get the assumption that it's good, you know what I'm saying? And then you find out after a week you're hooked.
Well, you know, I've read many stories about this phenomenon, and it's sad. It's happened to a lot of average people who have lost their jobs in the changing job market of modern times and have no place to go and are depressed because of how it can break up families, and they look to avoid the pain that they're experiencing. I don't know that the government has done enough to limit that, but obviously there are other solutions that prevail. But let's say you lived in a town in Ohio,
yeah,
and it's had manufacturing there for generations, and your family and friends are all there, and suddenly,
yeah, but
jobs are gone.
But Godfather, that shouldn't turn you into a heroin addict. Anyway, say hello to the God Mama for me. It is January 12, 2020. I love you, and we'll talk real soon.
Keep the faith, Pedro.
The Hall of Famer, the one, the only, the Godfather, retired HBO Godfather, Larry Merchant in the house. Thank you so much, Godfather. This is Ring Talk, live worldwide.
Together, long track, and they party. Hey! Who's good foot? You know the dance on the good foot. Dance on the good foot. Ain't nothing going on but the winter.
Now, more of Ring Talk with Pedro Fernandez.
Pull up some dust and sit down.
Let's go back to 2001 just for a second. Of course, my man, Jay Edson, was a referee. He was a boxing judge. He was also the event coordinator for Bob Arum's Top Rank. So he was diagnosed with cancer, and one of his last shows he did was the Jesus Chavez Challenge of Floyd Mayweather for the 130-pound WBC crown here in San Francisco. Of course, Manny Pacquiao made his San Francisco debut on the same card. Anyway, so Jay came to town, and Jay was dying, and I knew he was dying. This was going to be his last event. He'd been my partner for years. I mean, he'd give me tickets. He used to give me tickets. He used to tell me, go out and sell these tickets. I'm serious. He'd give me 15 or 20 of Bob Arum's tickets. Hey, Bob, he's gone. You can't do nothing now. Anyway, he'd give me like 15 or 20 tickets. So I'll be like $200 tickets, right? He said, go out and make some money. So I'd go out there on the strip or wherever it was. I'd go out there and make myself $1,000. And this was all due to Jay Edson being my buddy. He was just the greatest guy in the entire world. But Jay's got some boxing, some baseball history in his background as well. In 1951, he was a agent with a baseball team, and I think they were, who were they? Major League Baseball. I can't remember what the exact team was. Anyway, the bottom line is he was with a Major League Baseball team, and he brought a midget to the ballpark. Now, he snuck this midget into the locker room. The reason why they brought this midget in, because, you know, baseball players are about 5'8", 5'10", somewhere. They're bigger guys, bigger today than they were then. But in 1951, say they were, you know, 5'10", 5'11", right? So they brought in a midget. It was like 3'11". So obviously, when the pitcher threw four pitches to him, he couldn't get it between his knees and his chin. So therefore, four balls, Eddie Gaedel walked and went to first base. Then they introduced the pinch runner. Of course, baseball jumped in the next day and sort of outlawed that. They never allowed that to happen again. Mr. Eddie Gaedel was banned from baseball. But that was Jay Edson that snuck him into the ballpark today, into the stadium. And how did he sneak him into the ballpark? In a duffel bag. He snuck him in a duffel bag. He was wondering how do you sneak a live body, even though guy's only this big, how do you sneak a live body into a stadium? Huh? In a duffel bag. He did it in a duffel bag. Anyway, Jay, may he rest in peace. I'll never forget when he was here for that last event for the Mayweather fight. Of course, I sent him like $400 or $500. I think I spent about $400 in flowers. And I told the florist, I want you to decorate his entire room for him and his wife with nothing but flowers. They were making the most flowerful thing you can imagine in your life. So the guy says to me, he goes, $400? I said, hey, is that enough? That's what I told him. Is that enough? He said, yeah. I said, fine. And whatever you need to spend, whatever it needs, I don't care what it costs, I want you to cover this entire room in flowers. The entire room is a suite. He said, okay. I said, man, you don't do it. I said, I'll never buy any flowers from you again. I had girlfriends at the time, so I was buying flowers all the time. So the guy wanted to keep my business. So anyway, takes the flowers to the Japanese hotel. I can't remember what his name is now, here in the city by the bay. Of course, that was a Japanese hotel that had the club and they had a big nightclub in the basement. I can't remember right now. And it's killing me that I can't remember this, but they had a big nightclub in the basement, but they were attracting only black audiences. And the Japanese people that own the Hotel Nikko here in San Francisco. But the black audience and me and my brothers and all this kind of stuff dancing to Lenny Williams and Confunction and stuff like that, it didn't mix too well with the Japanese people that owned the hotel anyway. They ended up banning us. But that's where I had his room decorated. We sent them all kinds of weed, brownies, joints, pipes. You name it, Jay Edson had it all. Of course, Jay had told me about six or eight months later. But a few months later, he called me on the phone, and he again thanked me, he and his lovely wife. And when he passed on, his wife called me on the phone, and I thought that was very special. So I thought I would end this hour with Jay Edson. What a class act. I miss you, Jay. You are tuned to Ring Talk Live Worldwide, a.k.a. WBC TV, live and delayed on Veev TV. Of course, catch us Saturday and Sunday at 11 a.m. Pacific time. On Sports Byline, iHeartRadio, Sirius XM, Satellite Radio, of course, the American Forces Network, and Twitch.tv, the Sports Byline USA channel. No, wait! I'm not done! Hour number two, forthcoming of Ring Talk Live Worldwide, I'll bring in Bruce Lee's sparring partner, one of his good friends, Leo Fong, that and more, next after the news on Ring Talk Live Worldwide.